You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 100 by Rudolf Steiner, a compilation of two lecture cycles, one entitled Theosophy and Rosicrucianism, the other The Gospel of John, an earlier cycle, not the one given in 1908. The book is called True Knowledge of the Christ, translated by Anna Moyse. This is Lecture 3, given in Kassel on the 18th of June, 1907. One of the most sacred things human beings have is the principle known as self-awareness. People who understand this rightly will immediately realize that the term self-awareness really gives us the meaning of human existence. Self-awareness is the ability to know oneself to be an I, capital. The best way of getting an idea of this is to consider that within the whole compass of the German language, there is one word that differs fundamentally from all others, and that is the word I, ich, in German. Anyone can call a table, but everyone can only use the word I to refer to himself or herself. The word can never reach my ear from outside if it is to refer to me myself. This has been the feeling in spiritual science through the ages. In the Hebrew religion, for instance, when one would speak of this true nature of the inner human being, one would refer to the name of God that cannot be spoken. People would say, quote, when the word I is to be spoken, it must sound forth from the center of the entity itself. No other entity can say that name, close quote. It was, therefore, as if a shudder went through the whole congregation when the priest uttered the word Yahweh, I am the I am. There the God in man begins to speak. That is the pure, original meaning of the Hebrew name of God. You will come to know other names as well, but all have a particular connection with this one name. We use this word I to refer to the fourth principle of the essential human being. It is from this I that the human being works on the other principles, the astral body, the ether body, and also the physical body. However far we go back in the history of human consciousness, of human evolution, those four principles have always been there in the human being, and it is in this that human beings differ from the animals. To get an idea as to how someone who is developed relates to someone who is undeveloped, compare one of the wildest human beings, one who still eats other human beings, with a highly developed individual such as Goethe, Schiller, or Francis of Assisi. The cannibal lives directly by his drives and passions, the way they are in his astral body. He does have an eye, but it is still completely in the power of the astral body. The average person of today does know the difference between good and not good. This is because he has done some work on his astral body. He has worked on it and actually transformed some drives into ideals, as they are called. The more the individual has become transformed in his astral body, the higher his development. The average European of today has changed a great deal. Someone like Schiller or Goethe had transformed by far the greater part of his astral body. And someone like Francis of Assisi, who had subjugated all his passions to his will, did have an astral body that had been completely transformed by the eye. There was nothing in it that was not mastered by the eye. We call the part of the astral body that an individual has thus transformed his manas, or spirit self. That is the fifth principle in his essential nature. So, we are able to say that the eye holds the seed for transforming the astral body into manas, spirit self. It is also possible for human beings to transform not only the astral body, but also the ether body, letting the eye be master of the ether body. You have to understand, however, that this is much more difficult and proceeds much more slowly. The difference between transforming the astral body and the ether body is this. Consider how much you knew when you were 8, and how much more you have made your own since your young days. The astral body sustains all these transformations. It thus changes quite considerably day by day, because of the many impressions you gain of the outside world. It is different with the ether body. To get an idea of this, imagine the following. If you were a hot-tempered child at the age of 8, you will probably be hot-tempered now and then today. You will probably be hot-tempered now and then today. Very few people manage to change themselves to such a degree that they also transform their habits, their inclinations, their temperament, their character. This does not in any way contradict what I have been saying before. The astral body does have to do with pleasure and pain and our passions. But if these passions have become habit, character traits, they will be anchored in the ether body. And if you want to change such habits, the ether body has to change, seeing that it is the vehicle for all habits and character traits. I have on several occasions compared the changes in astral body and ether body with the movement of the minute and hour hands of a clock. Later on, we will be speaking of the development of more advanced pupils. These are not pupils in the sense of merely learning things. Yes, such a pupil must also learn a great deal. But infinitely more important than learning is that they work on their ether bodies, managing to change a hot temper into a sweet one. Occult science gives directions for exactly this. Someone who is able to transform a habit, that is, a quality of the ether body from one day to the next, has reached a high level of development. Such a transformation of the ether body must go hand in hand with all the other things a pupil learns of occult science. However, people will also change their ether bodies of their own accord, even if they have never heard of such inner development. This will be slowly and gradually, through many incarnations. The parts of the ether body which have been thus transformed are called buddhi, or life spirit. This is the sixth principle in essential human nature. Then there is the level which is much, much higher, where human beings also learn to work into their physical body and transform it. The parts of the physical body which have been transformed are called Atman, or spiritual human being. And this is the seventh principle. Atman relates to the German word for to breathe, Atmen. For this transformation comes from the breathing process. You can get an idea what it means to have your eye master your physical body, doing so consciously, if you consider how little we really know of our physical body. This knowledge has nothing to do with present-day anatomical knowledge of the physical body. Long before modern anatomy existed, there were ancient teachings, which were not, however, part of public knowledge, where you would find knowledge of the internal human being. It enabled the sages of old to follow the way in which life and blood flowed, for instance. This enabled them to look at themselves internally, observing the physical body in all its organs. When we have developed so far as that, it will be possible for not one particle in our body to be moving unless we will it. That is the transformation into Atman, spiritual human being. Someone might say, surely the physical body is the lowest principle in our essential nature? So how and why is it possible to transform it into the highest principle? It is exactly because the physical body is the lowest principle that it needs the human being's greatest effort to gain control of it. Hand in hand with the reworking of this physical body goes the gaining of mastery over powers that flood the whole cosmos. And mastery of these cosmic powers is magic, as we call it. In their true inner nature, human beings thus have seven parts, but these parts merge completely into one another. We will only get the right idea of how the seven parts interpenetrate if we compare them with the seven colors of the rainbow, for all of them are also contained in sunlight. Just as light is made of these seven colors, so man is made up of these seven principles. Let us now consider the significance which this differentiation has for the whole course of human life. Yesterday we heard of the nature of sleep. The physical body and the ether body are lying in bed. Breathing and blood circulation continue, reflecting the life of this ether body, but everything belonging to the astral body is together with the eye, lifted out of physical body and ether body. In death, on the other hand, the situation is different. For the whole time, from birth to death, the physical and the ether body form a single whole. At death, not only the astral body separates from the physical body, as in sleep, but also the ether body. This physical body is so complex, however, you'll remember what was said yesterday, that left to itself, it must disintegrate. Let us look with the clairvoyant eye, EYE, at the human being immediately after death. All we have before us is the physical body, with astral body and ether body floating above it. Now, immediately after death, a strange phenomenon occurs in the sentience of the individual who has died. For at the moment of death, the whole of his past life appears in the field of human memory, like a vast scene spread before him. Every, even the least thing that happened passes before him in images. This happens quite naturally, for apart from preventing decomposition of the human body, the ether body is also the vehicle for memory. The very moment when this ether body is relieved of its first function, it enters with great intensity into this second function. In life, every event involved pleasure and pain, joy and suffering, because the astral body was present throughout. Now, when the astral body has also departed, the individual goes through these memory images, the whole of his past existence, without sentience, without feeling, like a vast panorama. For as long as this ether body is connected with the physical body, the instrument which it has to use, the brain, is something which ensures that our memories will never be complete, only retaining fragments of impressions gained in life. This is because this physical brain had defects. But the moment the ether body is free of the physical body, it does remember everything. We have an analogy to this in ordinary life, and that is when we suffer a shock, when drowning, for instance, or falling off a cliff, and so on. This is due to the fact that the ether body is forcibly cast loose from the physical body at such a moment, something which also happens in a milder form when a limb goes to sleep, for example, or in hypnosis, in which case the clairvoyant sees the ether body hang out on both sides of the head. In materialistic physiology, the objection is raised that it is a case of material changes in the blood, but that is just because the effect is taken for the cause. The first thing that happens to someone after death is therefore this review of the past life, which varies in length, taking about 3.5 days on average. Then comes a kind of second death, with the etheric also separating completely from the astral body, leaving behind a kind of ether corpse. This ether corpse soon dissolves in the general cosmic ether, at a different rate in individual cases, but not completely so. A kind of essence of the past life remains, and is taken along by the eye. This is imperishable, and remains ours through all further incarnations. A new page is added to the existing ones, as it were, with every new incarnation. In Theosophy, this is called the causal body, and the quality of this causal body determines the form taken by later incarnations. The astral body is now on its own. How does this condition differ from sleep, when it has also departed from the other principles, the physical and ether body, and was therefore also on its own? The powers it has to use in sleep to develop and repair the physical body have come free when this physical body is ultimately laid aside. The astral body now uses them for itself and becomes aware of this. In this state of awareness of itself, the astral body now goes through a period which is best explained as follows. Think of enjoying a lovely dish. Someone is eating it and takes pleasure in it. This pleasure is not in the physical, but in the astral body. But the astral body needs a tool if it is to have that pleasure, a tongue, a palate. The physical body thus provides the tool, a tongue, a palate, for the astral body to have that enjoyment. What is the situation after death, when this physical body has been cast off? The instrument, the mediator of that pleasure, is no longer there. But the astral body has not lost its longing, its desire for that pleasure. Envisage this in the liveliest possible way. It is a condition like that experienced by someone suffering thirst in a desert. The astral body will still have the desire for the pleasure after death, and this to the degree to which it has been accustomed to having it in the past life. Because of that, this time after death is a period of unfulfilled longing for all human beings. This condition is known as the Kamaloka. Kama means desire, locus means place. The condition is the same as the one we find in many myths, such as the torment of Tantalus or Purgatory. This condition is not only a torment, of course, it is torment only until the astral body has got out of the habit of wanting pleasures. The more needs the astral body has had here in physical life, the longer will this condition continue. You may conclude from this that depending on the quality of the needs a person has had in the past life, the astral body may meet with not only torment, but depending on circumstances, also with something that is very good and pleasant in Kamaloka. It will, for instance, live through the joy it took so many times in the beauties of nature. To take pleasure in the beauties of nature, we do, of course, have to have eyes to see. But beauty is something which goes beyond the physical, and because of that, this condition is a source of real pleasure also in Kamaloka life. Things like this are the source of great joy and wonderful experiences also in the Kamaloka period. People can therefore make this period an even better one if they refrain from sticking to physical pleasures. If you think of this, you will understand many things in life. For instance, with regard to everything we call art. The more ideal the art, the more the ideal element shines through. The stronger and more elevating will be the influence of the work of art also beyond this life. The spiritual is its element. It is merely that materialistic short-sightedness has led to naturalism in art. Having lived through Kamaloka, we have reached the point where the human being no longer desires material pleasures. This point in time signals going through a completely new situation. There the soul also lays aside everything in the astral body that has not been worked on by the individual, by his I. And this laid aside astral body is the third corpse which a human being leaves behind him. Having come to be at one with everything gained from the other bodies, that is the essence of the ether body we spoke of, and now also that of the astral body, the I moves on into spirit land, and then the soul lives through the time that passes until it is born again. We will consider this tomorrow. Today I would merely want to stress once more that all these spiritual worlds are around us all the time, and not somewhere outside the space we live in. They are evident to the seer's eye, EYE, at all times. Someone who is able to look into these spiritual worlds can also see these shadows or phantoms, which are those corpses. It is these corpses which very frequently push their way into spiritualist seances. But when people attending these seances believe the astral corpse to be the actual individual concerned, that is just as silly as if you were to consider a dead body to be the actual person. This astral corpse, being exactly something for which the eye has no use, capital, often seems most ridiculous, therefore, in those spiritualistic seances. The end of Lecture 3.